big show for you here today. Oh, it's a packed offseason one. You guys brought it for our Dynasty Debates and our Panic Meter segment. Justin Boone joins me to break down situations we are concerned about, we're panicked about, maybe panicked about, coming out of the NFL draft. Plus, we settle some of your Dynasty Debates, what to do with your rosters, which players should you be talking about right now. We get into all that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that, it is my good pal, Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, buddy?
Man, this is always fun whenever we fire up the panic meter. We don't get to do it that much in the off season, but I'm excited to do it today. And I will say, we got a lot of nice submissions, including like a lot of kind words from people. And on social media all the time, people are writing nice messages. So I feel like just off the top, I want to take a minute just to thank everybody for those. People don't have to take the time to do that, but it is very nice when they acknowledge the work we're putting in and people really loving the show as well. So it's awesome.
Hell yeah. No, we appreciate you guys. Always, we appreciate the kind words, of course. Although it always makes me uncomfortable when people do write in, and this probably says more about me than it does about the listeners, when people write in something nice in the email submission, I always struggle, like, you know, when I got to read, like, hey, love the show, you guys are the best. I hate reading that, like, about ourselves. I do struggle with that. But again, that says more about me than it does the people sending it in. I do really appreciate that. And I also appreciate your guys' level of participation in the panic meter and the dynasty debates in the offseason. Because I definitely thought for a minute there, Boone, oh, no, we're not going to get very many submissions. People are doing this, that, and the other. And we certainly got a lot. So we have a ton to talk through today, pal. As you mentioned, we are firing up the People's Panic Meter. We are also doing some dynasty debates in the second half of the show. So we've got a lot to get into here today. We're basically just looking through NFL draft fallout. So it's going to be a big show where we're settling things. We're looking at where the dust has settled here coming out of the NFL draft. So without further ado, let's fire up the post-draft People's Panic Meter.
Would you say it's time for everyone to panic?
Yes, I would, Kent.
Oh my God! Okay, it's happening!
No! Wait!
Everybody stay calm! Stay calm!
I will say, on the note of staying calm here, Boone, as our sounder kind of just noted there, I'm not feeling very panicked today. When we were... when we were going through... So you might have to really bring the panic-based energy.
That's what I'm here for.
That's what you're here for on today's show. Cause I was going through all of these and listing like what our panic designations might be. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's cause I just booked a bunch of the hotels for my wife and I's trip to Portugal and Spain here in June. Shout out. We got a bunch of fun shows coming up in June that I will not be a part of. I'm going to try out one of these things. You're always talking about a vacation. I'm going to try one of those myself here. Yeah, I'm going to try one of those out here this summer. So maybe that's why I've just got this good, like, I'm looking forward to vacation-based energy. But I'm not feeling a lot of panic here coming out of the NFL draft. So you might need to bring that perspective today.
Yeah, I'm ready to do it. I feel like the last time we did this was probably, after free agency? And I feel like I was on one that day because I was putting guys, you know, in the coping corner. I was going for it. I don't know if we feel the same level of panic about some of these questions today, but... Still a bunch of things we got to talk through and provide some context on why we feel the way that we feel. But there's also some similar names, man, including the first one here coming up is like, this guy's like the mascot for the Panic Meter shows. We just talk about him every single time we do this. And I don't know how much more I have to add, but let's get into it.
Me neither. So yeah, let's get into it. And if you have listened to the show throughout the course of the panic meter, and even as we went into the offseason, I was like, I'm already tired of talking about the Jaguars wide receivers. And that remains the case here. But we did get our first email from Mark E. on the man himself, Mr. Panic Meter, Brian Thomas Jr. Hey guys, BTJ has me very worried. All of his production in 2024 came in the second half while Trevor Lawrence was injured. He has never had sustained success with him at quarterback. Are they just not on the same page? I had BTJ in two leagues and dealt him in one today for a mid to late 2027 first round rookie pick. How did I do? Should I hold him in the other league? Thanks. Before we talk about panic designations for Brian Thomas Jr., I will just say, and maybe this answers the question a little bit, Boone, I think dealing him for a mid 2027 first is a good deal. It sounds Nate was telling us on the last show. Yeah, Nate was telling us on the last show that that's supposed to be a really good draft class. Maybe that doesn't materialize, but that has been the talk that class is going to be good. Still, if you're in a situation where you don't need Brian Thomas Jr. on your fantasy team, I totally don't mind re-rolling at this point. So just straight off the rip here, I do think that looks to me like a pretty good deal. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know how you can feel that excited about his fantasy outlook and maybe his dynasty outlook. Maybe things will change. Maybe all these rumors about him potentially getting traded will come to fruition at some point here. But at the moment, this is not the same guy that we saw during that rookie season when he was great for fantasy. His situation's changed. He has a lot more target competition. We saw Jacoby Myers show up and play very well initially there. They extended him. Parker Washington came on down the stretch last season. He looks like he's going to be a meaningful part of the offense. You have Travis Hunter hanging around there. We'll see how much he can get involved. But yeah, you just can't look at this offense the way we did during that rookie season for BTJ when he was phenomenal for fantasy. Things have changed. We got to adapt. And I think right now, if you can re-rack him for a 2027 first, that is a massive win. That is a huge win. I don't think there's going to be a lot of offers like that out there. I think you're going to have to try to package him with something else maybe to get that kind of value back in most leagues. But I would do it 100% of the time. I would try to move on from him if you can, because unless we get a George Pickens type situation where all of a sudden he leaves his team, goes somewhere else and gets a better role in a different offense, then we'll change our assessment. But at the moment, everything the Jaguars are saying is that they don't want to trade him. So I don't know how you can expect that deal is going to come through and be like that silver bullet, like saving grace for his dynasty value.
Yeah, I think that's right. I will say, just on the panic meter note of it, and again, maybe this has nothing to do with like my just energy coming into this show. It has more to do with just how I'm feeling today. And also just the idea of, hey, it's a new season. I'm kind of willing to wipe the slate clean a little bit for these guys. I do only have some panic about Brian Thomas Jr. I think that could be for a couple of different factors here. One, what I mentioned, like I'm kind of wiping the slate clean for him a little bit. Two is I do think I've adjusted my expectations back for this player. A lot to the point too, by the way, that Mark E. noted here. Like Brian Thomas Jr. in the back half of his rookie season was awesome. It was on a bad team where there were a lot of negative game script. And Mac Jones, I don't think the fact that Trevor Lawrence was not the quarterback like really matters. But, you know, Mac Jones, backup quarterback, kind of locking in on Brian Thomas Jr. And he did not have like any target competition during that time. That's not to say that he was bad through, let's just call it, the first 10 weeks of his rookie season. But, you know, he was being targeted like 19% of his team's target share. You know, he was dealing with some injuries during that span too, like rib injuries, stuff like that. So there's a little bit of messiness in isolating like different chapters of his rookie season and everything. But I think it wouldn't shock me, I guess, and this is like a loosely held take, that we look back at his rookie year as kind of not a fluke, but a little bit of like that was the best stretch of his career from a production standpoint. Because I also think on film, Boone, he was good. He was obviously really good, but there were some incomplete parts of his profile, even from like a reception perception standpoint at the end of his rookie year, that I think would say like, well, we needed to see those filled in for him to graduate to being an elite number one receiver in the league. And what we saw in year two was they actually all got worse in terms of him beating zone coverage, going in over the middle, dropping the football, stuff like that. The silver lining though here, and I'm going to throw it back to you on this note, Jacksonville clearly with their first pick this year, second rounder, Nate Borkircher. They took a blocking tight end. They clearly want to go to more of these heavy personnel packages. If that's the case, like one of these receivers is coming off the field, and I don't think it's BTJ, right? Like, because he's the X receiver here. Like, he fits that role the best. So if he's in that spot and like it's Parker Washington or Jacoby Myers coming off the field more often than BTJ, that actually might be like a positive for his outlook, even if they are going away from three receiver sets.
It's a good note, because one of the things I was going to say is like, what changes from last year to this year, right? I think so often when we have a change in the coaching staff or something, we always want to look at like the positive. And last year, I think we looked at the positive and went, okay, Liam Cohen's showing up. This offense is about to get better. That's going to be great for BTJ. And yet it wasn't. It was great for the team as a whole. It was great for the offense as a whole. And he kind of just never totally seemed to fit what they were doing last year. It never resulted in the kind of production we were seeing the year before. I mean, you look from a fantasy standpoint, he only had double-digit fantasy points in two of his last eight games. He only had double-digit fantasy points four times in 14 games last year. And yes, a couple of those there were injuries to deal with. But overall, we just didn't see him as like a true feature part of the offense. So if you want to try to make a case and say that, yes, they're going to go to heavier packages, that's going to lead to him being one of the only receivers out there, okay, maybe. But I also think we're like really getting on a narrow path there for what could change in order for him to turn into like a really good fantasy asset. Because otherwise, I see him as, I guess, the second best fantasy receiver on this team at the moment. Like wide receiver three, wide receiver four, flex territory. And I don't see a ton of paths for him getting above that. Even if the scenario you're describing happens, I still don't know that that's going to get him up into like a wide receiver two range. I think he's just kind of locked down in that area on a team that has a bunch of options. They're going to use all of them. They're even going to use Brenton Strange at tight end, who's going to factor in and have some games. So it's just a really complete offense. And there isn't the need to like just give him a ton of targets and have like, you know, a Chris Olave type season like last year, where Chris Olave just got a massive amount of targets. It boosted him into a new territory in his career. Other than a trade, I don't really see that happening for BTJ. So if you like him as your wide receiver three flex option and he has some spiked weeks, I can get on board with that. Other than that, I'm just not that excited to have him, and I would be trying to package him and move him for what I could and get some decent value if you can still.
Yeah, I think I might have, I might just have a little bit more hope than you that it was just a weird year last year, right? That maybe we can wipe the slate clean a little bit and like he can be a better player on the field overall. I will just say, like, even if that happens, just based on how crowded it is in Jacksonville right now, and it is legit crowded, I think he would be like a spike week wide receiver too, which is kind of what he was as a rookie before all those guys got banged up and everything like that. So that's kind of where I view him right now. But Boone's at total panic. I'm at some panic with the admission here that I am I'm looking forward to vacation a little bit next month, 2 months from now. I should probably not look forward to vacation. It's just a little bit of ways away.
I don't know if you see producer Colin's note here that Scott Pianowski just took him in our mock redraft that we're doing that we will be talking about on the show on Tuesday. He just took BTJ in, what are we in now? I'm not even sure.
I think we're like in the eighth round. Took him at the top of the ninth round.
Took him in the first pick of the ninth round. I think in that range, okay. I could listen to that. He's a wide receiver 38 off the board. Okay, that's fine. I don't want to spoil Tuesday's show because maybe we'll discuss them there. But yeah, wide receiver 38, I don't see a path to a massive ceiling for him, which after the rookie season, I think we thought that was maybe not likely, but there was a good chance that he could come through with something much bigger than what we've seen from him last year.
Yeah, that's fair. That's kind of what my point about like adjusting expectations, I guess, back a little bit. For a player like this, who I still think has a positive NFL career ahead of him. Okay, next one comes in through the email line from Chris Yu on Harold Fannin Jr. This is what I'm talking about. Hey guys, love the show. Started listening regularly last season. Y'all are now my go-to for fantasy advice. Appreciate you. All right. I was able to say something nice. There we go. Okay, my question is around Harold Fannin's value for both 26 and 27 and in the long term. What do you see as the actual impact of the new wide receivers in Cleveland to Fannin's value? Does it take him down a full tier from tight end one to a tight end two? Or is it more just moving him a few slots down within his current tier? I totally see the point where these new wide receivers will take volume away from Fannin, but I also wonder if having Monken as his coach is actually reason for optimism despite the increased mouth to feed. Monken was the offensive coordinator for University of Georgia with Brock Bowers and then moved to Baltimore, where both Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely remained focus parts of the offense. My optimism might be just a heavy dose of hopium, as I've been leaning on him to be my go-to tight end for the future, but curious what your guys' thoughts are. Thanks. Boone, what do you think about this? A full adjustment from a tier perspective for Harold Fannin, or where are we at?
So when I'm talking about tiers, I think it's a tier within the tight end ones. I'm not bumping them down into tight end two range. But we talked a bit about this before the draft when there was a ton of rumors that the Browns might take a receiver at six overall. I think you brought it up, whether it was on the recap show or the episode that we did with Tice earlier in the week when we were doing the mock draft, that now there's just so much competition. It's hard not to move him down. Last year, he led the team in basically every major receiving category, and he did it because there wasn't that many other guys commanding targets. Now you're bringing in two receivers, regardless of what you think about them, the team invested highly in them. They're going to give them big opportunities here. So now he's going to have more competition for targets. And I think you have to then bump him down. Maybe it does get offset by Monkett showing up and this passing attack taking a step forward. But we could just keep playing the pros and cons game. They don't have a quarterback that we have faith in at the moment. So how are they going to support multiple fantasy options there? So for me, it's bumping him down. Very quickly, though, you start to question who you can put him below, right? Because you get into the Kyle Pitts, Sam Laporta type range. I think he belongs more in that group now. So away from the top five, where I think those guys all have a shot to potentially put up tight end one overall numbers. I don't think Fannin has that opportunity anymore because he's in this Browns offense, because they don't have a quarterback necessarily, and because now he's got a lot more competition. That's how I'm viewing it. But it's not a massive drop. It's dropping him a few spots. You're not taking him out of the top 10 or the top 12 or anything like that. I think he still has a really bright future. And if you have him as your fantasy tight end, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine is probably the right answer. And, you know, yeah, we did talk about this, me and you, on the recap show, that I think Harold Fannin has to come out of the NFL draft as a, you know, fantasy loser. But when I went in to do my tight end rankings, I was like, well, there's just really not far I can drop him because there's not a ton of other appealing names at that tight end. You know, I think he dropped him outside the top five. I think I finished with him somewhere around seven-ish. And I think getting lower than that, you know, you're just bumping into some, I don't know, some guys I'm not that all that excited about either. So last year, Harold Fannin finished with 107 targets, which was fifth at the tight end position. The guys ahead of him, Trey McBride, Kyle Pitts, Tyler Warren, Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce was one of those guys like, am I ranking Travis Kelce ahead of Harold Fannin in the year 2026? Maybe. I don't know. I could really get there. But all of those guys, like, there's a theme here. And a lot of it is like, other than Tyler Warren, who was better, I think, probably to start last year than how he finished. That was like a historically efficient Colts offense in the first few weeks of the season. Other than that, though, it's all like injuries and chaos at the wide receiver position for all of for Pitts, for McBride, and for Kelce, and for Harold Fannin, man. I mean, shoot, look at some of these receivers that were on the Browns depth chart last year. Like, this is the list of Browns players in terms of wide receivers and tight ends and targets. It's Harold Fannin with 107, led the team. Jerry Jeudy, a disaster season for Jerry Jeudy, 106. David Njoku, Isaiah Bond, who was signed in as a free agent, what, in like August? After having legal issues that called him to fall out of the draft. Cedric Tillman, 39 targets, was fifth on the team. Cedric Tillman played 10 games, was like never healthy last year. Jamari Thrash, 15 targets, like sixth most among wide receivers and tight ends on that team. It's just like a completely different looking room now. And I think that context matters. Now, to Chris's point, though, Monken showing up is a positive for sure. I'm writing an article about this. It'll be on the site today about like what needs to go right for these Browns rookie receivers and the Jets rookie pass catchers. Some of the things we talked about on the last episode. However, I mean, Monken's a positive, but the quarterbacks are a negative. So like, does that offset it? I mean, Shedeur Sanders, I think you can make an argument that he's better than the stats, but he ranked 37th. Out of 37 qualifying quarterbacks in EPA per play and success rate last year. And Deshaun Watson hasn't played good football since 2020 when we were like all inside for COVID. So like, I mean, is this that I think is an offsetting part of it too. So I have some panic about Harold Fannin, and I think like some panic is probably the most I can get to. Do you think there's any more than that?
No, it's some panic for me. I mean, if you look at his stat line last year, 72 catches, 731 yards and six touchdowns. Do you think he's really going to outperform that? Like, I think something similar or maybe slightly lower is my projection for him. I don't see the scenario where now all of a sudden he's up in the 900 yard range or, you know, putting up 1,000 yards like the true top guys do. I think it'll be something similar or slightly less. And yeah, that's why the excitement's just taken out a little bit. But I am interested to see what this Browns offense looks like, because now we've always believed in that rushing attack. And I think Quinshon Judkins, as long as he's healthy, is going to have a chance to have a really good fantasy season. It's just been a minute since we've had a receiver there that we really cared about. And now you potentially bring two guys in that could have a pretty big role in that offense and could turn into something fantasy wise. So I can't wait to kind of see how this turns out for the Browns, but I can't say that I'm overly hopeful or that all of a sudden now this is a passing attack that I'm definitely going to invest in. There might be some value there, and yet it might just be personal bias that, like, investing in that Browns passing attack just always, to me, makes me hesitate on clicking anybody's name.
All right, let's get to the tweets here next that we got sent in. This one comes in from SimShady99, and I think this one is directed pretty clearly at me. I'd like to know what you do with Travis Hunter. Do you still believe he is a generational wide receiver, or have you changed your opinion? After paying up for him last season, largely based on your analysis, I'm willing to hold if you still think he's a generational talent, or are you taking the L on that? For me, the Travis Hunter conversation in fantasy is just like almost pointless to have at this point, because we don't really know what he's going to be doing this season in terms of his allocation of snaps to defense versus offense. And it's all like totally just theory and the same report getting kind of regurgitated that he's going to play more cornerback this year. Like, he's definitely going to play more cornerback this year. There's no question about that. In terms of him being a generational wide receiver, he was a generational prospect because he was a great player on both sides of the ball. I had him as not even the best wide receiver that I've scouted since 2021. Like, Ja'Marr Chase, Marvin Harrison Jr., who hasn't worked out, obviously, so far. We're going to talk about him a little bit later. I would have ranked ahead of him. So, like, truly not a generational wide receiver, but he was an elite wide receiver prospect to me personally. The problem is that he's just not going to be playing only wide receiver, and that was always going to be the case. So, I mean, whether you're willing to hold on to him or not is truly, Boone, I think, like, personal preference based. Like, can you put up with the, is he going to be playing defense? Is he going to be playing full time? Like, if you can do all that stuff, I guess you can hold on to him. If you have no stomach for that and you just want to, like, not have him on your dynasty roster, I wouldn't mind you at all, like, trading him away. I think that whether you wanted to take him last year in your rookie draft was, like, what's your risk tolerance to the fact that he might be playing cornerback in 3 years? And if you want to hold him right now, like, it's what's your risk tolerance to the fact that he might play 60% cornerback and 40%, you know, wide receiver this year or something like that. And by the way, like, we have no idea if that's even going to be the real kind of split workload here. So I don't, to me, that's like the state of the union on Travis Hunter. I still think he has the potential to be a really great wide receiver, but they have three really good wide receivers and they really need him at cornerback. So they're going to play him a lot at cornerback this year. And there's just no getting around that, as much as I know I'd personally love to see him play a bunch of wide receiver.
It's almost a little bit like the BTJ thing, where the situation's changed from last season, right? They go out, they acquire Jacoby Myers. That's a whole new variable. And then Parker Washington kind of breaking out down the stretch. That's a whole new thing that we weren't really factoring in. He was a depth piece on that roster before he had the end of the season that he did. So things have kind of changed there. I mean, the injury, I don't feel that worried about. James Gladstone coming out and saying that he should be a full go for training camp. So that's not really the concerning part for me. It's just, I look at him and he's the fourth receiver there now. And I think they are going to play him more at corner. I still think he's going to get used a bunch at receiver, but the idea of the last time we saw him on the field, it was what, 8 catches over 100 yards and a touchdown. That was great, but the game done changed. Everything is different now, and I don't think he's going to get that same kind of opportunity. There will be some splash weeks, but you can't feel that good about having him in your lineup as sort of this really risky dart throw type option. The problem also is, though, in Dynasty, you're not getting any value for him whatsoever. This is like bottoming out compared to where he was at last year. So if you want to get off the ride right now and just sell for 50 cents on the dollar, I don't think you're getting a first round pick for him. You'd have to package him with something else to get that. So you're probably getting like a second round pick in return. I think I would hold him for that. So to me, and I do have him on some teams, I'm just holding. I'm putting him on my bench. I'm hoping that the situation changes again and that all of a sudden he gets another opportunity. Maybe down the road, that BTJ trade that we keep referencing could possibly happen. Maybe someday it eventually does, and then all of a sudden Hunter now has more of a role in the offense. But regardless, at the moment, no, I wouldn't be selling him unless you are just completely out. You think this is never going to happen. He has no chance, and you're just going to sell for whatever you can get. Normally in Dynasty, that tends to be a bad move.
Yeah, right. Like, that's why I do think that's a bad move, because, yeah, BTJ could get traded. Jakobi Meyers is going to turn 30 at some point. Like, here pretty soon, he's an aging player on his fourth NFL team, you know, third NFL team. There's a real chance that, yeah, he's like, he declines, and then they play Hunter Moore in 2027 at wide receiver. But that's the other part of this that I would tell people too, that it sounds like, based on just, again, what I know about the situation, that like the Jaguars almost kind of view him as like two players in a way, where, okay, yeah, last year we were weaker at wide receiver than cornerback entering the season, so we really wanted to ramp him up at wide receiver. And then now they're weaker at cornerback than at wide receiver, because, as you mentioned, like, we might always look back at that practice injury that he got coming out of that bye week as like a sliding doors moment. Like, I really think there's a chance.
Yeah.
Like, I truly, truly believe this, that like, if he had just played the rest of the year at wide receiver, like, he'd be locked in as a, I mean, would play DB too, but like, he would be locked in as a starting receiver and a really good one for this team. But a lot of things have changed, to your point. And again, now they view it as like, well, we're weaker cornerback this year, so we're going to do that. And if you don't want to, and if you just don't want to put up with that at all, there's plenty of good wide receivers, you know, in the NFL. Like, you can just like move on from it. I know for me personally, if I had Travis Hunter on my dynasty teams, I would just be holding on to him and see what happens. I think that's like the only thing that you can really do at this point.
Go trade for a veteran receiver. Go trade for Mike Evans. See if you can get one of those guys that are sort of near the end of their career, but can give you some valuable production this year, maybe next year, that can kind of fill the void while you're waiting for Hunter to hopefully finally break out eventually and get that opportunity down the road. And in the meantime, at least you have that piece that you got at a bit of an age discount, and you can have them in your starting lineup and not have to completely worry or be so disappointed that you spent a first round pick to get Hunter last year and you thought he was going to be a starter in your lineup, and now he's just a bench piece at the moment.
Yeah, I will tell you this. If I had the chance to do it all over again, I would rank him just as highly. I would think about him just as highly as a prospect. And you kind of know, you just have to know, like, that was a big risk. I'm very tolerant to those risks, and that's the way I like to play. But if you don't like to play that way and you don't want to put up with this, then I guess that's fine. But I'm with Boone that I would just try to hang on and see what happens here, and probably just not listen to every single report that's like, oh, he's going to play only corner this year, because truly nobody has said that. So, you know, just media literacy, folks. Let's work on that. Okay, Eagles offense here. Last one we're going to talk about before we go to break. I'm worried about cannibalization in Philadelphia between Smith, Lemon, Goddard, Stowers, and Barkley. Who is the most irreplaceable and most replaceable in the passing game? Good question here from Vince. I have really no panic about the Eagles offense, Boone, and I actually kind of look at that group like, that's not that crowded. Like, do you have any panic about any of these guys right now with what we're looking at?
No, I'm really interested in this offense. I mean, you're bringing in a new OC. We know AJ Brown is going to be gone. I think we can probably more than pencil that one in at this point. And I think Lemon and Stowers are going to be like a nice injection of youth. You know how I feel about Lemon. Like, I think he's got that edge to him, that chip on his shoulder. I'm sure he's listening to everything everyone said since the draft, and he's going to want to come out and prove himself. He has that kind of personality. So I'm excited to see what he can become in the NFL. If you're looking at like who's the most irreplaceable, I mean, it's probably Devonta Smith who's going to be the new number one when AJ Brown moves out of the picture. So I think he's somebody that, I mean, the days of trying to get him at a decent dynasty value are probably gone at this moment. But, you know, you do want to look at him as a guy that you're trying to acquire, you're trying to target and redraft and a dynasty. The guy that, you know, you look at being completely replaceable is Dallas Goedert, because when you had Smith and Brown healthy, Goedert really wasn't great for fantasy. I think he's a really talented tight end, but he just hasn't gotten that opportunity because he was playing behind those guys. Maybe it was going to happen this year, but then they go out in the draft and just completely restock. So now it's not going to happen for him in my mind. There's all these other options. There's Stowers just breathing down his neck waiting for his opportunity. So Goddard's the one that I've moved down after the draft here. He's down into the tight end two range, where he was sneaking up into the low end tight end one range with the idea that Brown was going to be out of the picture. Now I think Goddard, it's just a matter of time, and it could even happen during this season where we see Stowers just start to take on more of a role in that offense. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't have any panic here. I'm not worried about these guys at all. And the one, I mean, Saquon Barkley, you just have to reassess. He's not the, you know, number one overall running back that we saw a couple years ago. I think now you look at him as a low end RB1, sort of high end RB2, still a guy that you're happy to have on your team, though.
Right. And he's not going to catch a lot of passes. So if we're talking about, you know, who's the replaceable asset in the passing game, like Barkley's not going to be a high, high volume receiver. I think both tight ends from a fantasy perspective will be, you know, quote, replacement level players, like just kind of spike week guys that you aren't starting every single week. Like even Stowers, if he truly emerges, is probably at this point not ready to play all of the snaps and everything. The receivers, I couldn't agree with you more, man. I mean, like Devontae Smith is an alpha. He's ready to be an alpha. I've got him ranked well ahead of consensus in my dynasty rankings, in the anticipation that obviously he's going to thrive as the wide receiver one. Lemon, I went on a whole big tweet thread about this yesterday, so people can check this out. I'm not worried about him fitting with Jalen Hurts in terms of the over the middle stuff. And so, yeah, to me, like, I think I'm fine with all these guys. I have no panic. And in fact, I'm excited to invest in a lot of these players this year, particularly Devontae Smith, who's going to handle a lot of the over the middle stuff when that happens. Okay, we are going to take our first quick break. We come back, we're talking through more players you're panicked on and some dynasty debates later on. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we are back, and it's time to talk through some more wide receivers that we're always talking about in this segment. Okay, let's talk about Marvin Harrison Jr., our next one up here. Great question from Anthony. Marvin Harrison Jr. in a new offense. How many of his issues were Kyler Murray? I've got questions about his fit in the new offense, and it seems like there's a lot of target competition between Trey McBride, Michael Wilson, and even Jeremiah Love. Boone, I think it would be crazy to not have some panic about Marvin Harrison Jr. based on what we have seen so far, but where are you at with Marvin Harrison entering a new year with a new offense?
Yeah, it's some panic. I mean, the story's not over on him by any means, right? It's only been two seasons. The dude's only going to be 24 this year. He dealt with some injuries. The quarterback play that was mentioned there might not have been the best fit for him. But if he was healthy last season, this is where I keep coming back to. If he was healthy last season and it was Michael Wilson who got hurt, what kind of numbers would we have seen from Marv? Would he? I don't know. It would have been the same. I don't know that it would have been 100+, 150+ yards in some of those games, but he would have had pretty big stats. And I think people would be very excited about that. And it just kind of worked out against him where he was hurt and Michael Wilson got an opportunity to go out there where it was just Trey McBride and Michael Wilson really in the passing game and put up these really big games. So that's what I kind of keep coming back to on this one. I think it's just sort of public perception being very down on him and the great expectations that he had coming in. I don't know that he's ever going to be that guy. In fact, I don't think he's going to be that guy, but he could still be a very productive NFL receiver. I was kind of hoping when there were like trade rumors in the offseason that my Bills would go out and try to make a move to get him, because I think that's a guy that could have something unlocked here in the coming years, and it could start as early as this season. That's where I stand. I know the quarterback situation's strange. I know the offensive line, a lot of people have questions about that, but we're getting a new coaching staff in there. He's going to get a fresh slate, a new opportunity, and as long as he has some good health, I think he's going to go on to have a fine career.
I think you are right about that. And it's such a good point, too, that like his injuries don't ever get discussed. And like people act as if like Michael Wilson and Marvin Harrison Jr. were both out there and like Michael Wilson was just dusting him. That's definitely not what happened. I mean, when you look at a guy in week six, when Jacoby Brissett gets his first start, Marvin Harrison Jr. had two targets, two catches, 32 yards, and then immediately got a concussion. Only played 24% of the snaps. Week seven, Green Bay comes back. He has 58 yards. Then there was the Monday night Dallas game in week nine, where he just completely obliterated that bad Cowboys defense, obviously. Week 10 against the Seahawks, terrible game for everybody involved. 12 targets, three catches for 33 yards, couple of drops mixed in there. That definitely wasn't. Marv obviously has not been blameless throughout this. Like, he's left some plays on the football field. There's no question about that. Then he gets hurt, comes back in week 13, and that's when the heel injury happens. Six catches, 69 yards in that game against the Bucs, and then obviously Michael Wilson just dominates the rest of the way with Marvin Harrison barely playing. So I'm with you, man. Like, I want to see what he looks like in this new offense. It's not that all of his issues were Kyler Murray. He definitely made his own issues, but they weren't a really good stylistic fit together. And I think Drew Petzing also, just like, they all, as I said a lot about this whole situation, like, all three of those guys just needed to get away from each other. So now that they are away from each other, I'm very much willing to kind of wipe the slate clean for all of these players and see what happens here. I really don't think that's that much target competition. I mean, like, three guys, like, yeah, I think Trey McBride could see a little bit of a dip in his targets. I think Michael Wilson will be good, but probably won't dominate to the level he was last year. So I actually think this is totally set up for these three guys, McBride, Wilson, and Harrison, to have, you know, reasonable fantasy seasons on an offense that I think will be well designed, but we'll see what the quarterback play looks like.
Yeah, I think that's the most sound take to have on this one. People overreact, right? The expectations were so high coming in that now, especially in Dynasty, people feel so burned about this one. And they're not really looking at the context and considering the fact that this is still a young player, by all accounts, a very hardworking player and a guy who I think is going to still get better here. And the chips just haven't really fallen in his direction. Hopefully this year we get something better. I wonder what the quarterback situation is also going to look like next year, because I don't think Jacoby Brissett is the long-term answer. I definitely don't think Gardner Minshew is a long-term answer. And I don't think Carson Beck is going to be the long-term answer. My guess how it plays out this year is Brissett starts the season, Beck ends the season, and depending how you feel about Beck, maybe that's a problem for Harrison down the stretch. But I think there's a good chance we're going to see a different quarterback in this offense in 2027, and hopefully an upgrade there, and we could get a little more out of that position for him as well.
All right, next one comes in on Roma Dunze and Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Panicking about Roma Dunze a little bit, I've got a bit of concern that his style of wide receiver isn't a fit for fantasy unless they're getting a healthy amount of touchdowns. And then the next one is, should we be tearing down from JSN, or do you see his last season as somewhat repeatable? This comes in from Kyle. Also, they had a bonus. Is Jalen Waddle a sell? I'll go real quick on the last two, Boone. No, I don't think Waddle's a sell. And two, I couldn't possibly be less panicked about anybody more than Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Do you feel differently to either of those two questions?
No, 100%. We don't even have to spend any time going over it. I completely agree with you there. I think for Adunze, I think the offense started to move in a different direction as the year went along last season. I think early in the year, they had these two young rookies that they used high picks on, and it took a little while for them to get integrated into the offense. But eventually we saw late in the season, Colston Loveland and Luther Burden, in my mind, are the future of this offense. Adunze, also a good piece, but he's not the player we saw early in the year. He's not the top 12 fantasy wide receiver that he was producing like in the first month or so. He's just not that player. I think he's more in that wide receiver three flex type range. He's going to have some good games. He's not going to be that weak winner, that difference maker. And I don't know that either of the receivers will be, to be honest, because I think Colston Loveland is going to have something to say about potentially being the best fantasy option in that passing game. But Luther Burden, in my mind, has a better chance to come on and be that number one guy, maybe even be the bigger fantasy difference maker, maybe even flirt with, you know, top 15, top 20 type numbers. That's how I'm viewing this. I think that's how this coaching staff is hoping that this works out. This is the direction that they're headed in. So I'm worried about Adunze. It's not massive panic. It's just some panic, because I think he's going to be a good player. But it kind of goes back to the last question of, what were your expectations for him? And if you're still clinging to the start last season or to where you took him in Dynasty, then I get it. You might feel pretty burned and you might have a lot more panic. For me, I feel like I saw the writing on the wall as last season was going on. So I've come into this offseason just kind of reestablishing his value in my mind more outside of the top 30, or kind of right around wide receiver 30, which puts him in that wide receiver three flex range.
I think you like him more than I do.
I know you do.
I definitely like him more than you do, for sure. Unless he does catch a bunch of touchdowns. And I also think, by the way, Kyle's question here about like his style of wide receiver, I sort of go both ways on that because it kind of depends on what role he's going to play on this team this year. Like, is he going to be a big bodied clear out X receiver for this team? Then yeah, like that definitely is not the style of wide receiver that puts up a bunch of fantasy points unless you're getting a lot of touchdowns. But when he was playing really well and producing in the first part of the season, that's not the role that he was playing in either. You know, like, I mean, that's not the role they onboarded him in all off season and he had success in prior to getting hurt. That's another thing too. Like, if he doesn't have that heel injury, doesn't have the foot injury, like, are we having this conversation? I don't know that we are having this conversation. The other thing I think is kind of, to me, a variable that we should talk about here. Like, this appears to be an offense that will be highly, highly concentrated. Whereas last year, I think it was kind of like, oh, it's a little bit crowded in Chicago. The fact that the third receiver on this team is either going to be Khalif Raymond or Xavier Thomas, who they drafted in the third round, and I think kind of profiles as a Khalif Raymond type player, I think that's really good news for all three of these guys. Like, to me, I think this will be a very concentrated offense between those three players, and it'll look a lot like Detroit, where it's Amon-Ra St. Brown, but probably not to that. I don't think any of the receivers will be to that level, and, you know, a tight end, and then the second receiver, and, like, that's kind of it. I mean, there's like gimmicky players that pop up every now and again, but I don't think any of these guys will be big, big time target earners. So to me, I really like Luther Burden. I honestly think, like, Luther Burden versus Roma Dunze to me is more of like a toss up, where it does sound like the community more so views it as like, no, this is clearly Luther Burden's job. And I just don't see like a lot of evidence watching this team last year that one guy is clearly better than the other, which is why I kind of view it more as a toss up when both of them are healthy and on the field together.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that shocking if it works out that way. I think right now I have Burden around wide receiver 20 or so. And like I said, Adunze around wide receiver 30. So there's a bit of a break in that tier for sure. But it's not that far off in terms of the projections, right? I'm looking at it more like I feel like the ceiling is higher for Burden if he continues to develop, if he continues to grow. But it's not impossible that this could go either way, or just be one of these offenses where we see these guys have stretches of big time production and then all of a sudden it shifts and then the other guy kind of has some big games. Yeah. Because I really do believe, and I feel like you do too. Again, I don't want to spoil the mock draft on Tuesday, but I'm pretty sure you took Loveland pretty high in that mock draft. So I feel like you must feel pretty good about him.
Yeah, like that's the thing. I think you got to like almost put Colson Loveland to the side, because like, yeah, he's awesome and very clearly like within his position is going to be that dude. When we're just talking about the two receivers, though, like, yeah, I have Burden at 23 and Adunze at 24, and in the same tier in Dynasty, I prefer Adunze a little bit just because like he's the type of player I like. And I really do think like his start to the season is very instructive, especially in how they were using him. And like, there's no reason that like, oh yeah, Burden can get better in year two. Well, Dunze can get better in year three. So that's why to me, it's like such a toss up between those two guys. But yeah, no, Colson Loveland.
We've seen more of Adunze, right? We're now a couple of years into seeing Adunze. And yes, there were injuries last year and there was different target competition and all that stuff. But we've seen a little more of his NFL resume so far, where Burden kind of just scratching the surface. But I'm nitpicking. I'm just like, I get it. I'm sort of like cherry picking.
I like the way that you painted it, though, that both these guys are probably going to have pockets of next season. And like, I guarantee one of these guys will get off to a great 2 week start. And then week three, week four, week five, it'll be the next guy. And then the other one will be in the panic meter during the regular season. Like, what happened to this guy? It's like, well, the other guy's playing really well. Like, I think that's probably how this is going to go. But yeah, I want to invest in both of these wide receivers. Like, it's probably going to become a stupid fantasy culture war in the offseason, you know, like on Twitter, where you like this guy, you hate the other. No. Like, you should take both of these guys. And that's kind of my, I think I've said that about 15 times this offseason. I guess I'm going to have to say it 25 more before week one.
Yeah, it's an offense that we definitely want to invest in, though. So I'm not against taking either of these guys where they're going in drafts. You want pieces of it. And from a real life standpoint for the Bears, if it goes back and forth with these guys both having big stretches, that's probably the best case scenario for them. They would love for that to happen, right? They don't necessarily want to have that one guy that, you know, defenses can focus on, who's the center and the featured guy. But yeah, I'm fine taking all of these guys, and I want pieces of that Bears offense, including DeAndre Swift, who I think is a great value right now in drafts. But we'll have that conversation another day.
I was going to say, it sounds like the answer is like draft Caleb Williams, maybe, if we like all these pass catchers. So we'll see about that.
That is also true.
I think we can be quick on this next one, because, I mean, how the hell do you even answer this question? But this is a good question that we should discuss a little bit from Darren here. Does Puka's offseason make you concerned at all for him moving forward as a top tier dynasty asset? I mean, I think it'd be stupid to say I have no panic about this if I have Puka Nacua on my dynasty roster, but like, how the hell do you answer this question? And like, do you actually have an actionable takeaway from all this, Boone?
Not really. I would hold him. I wouldn't sell a top tier talent like this. And how many times, and every situation is different. You have to look at the context. You have to approach each one individually. But how many times have we seen, especially receivers, but talented NFL players getting some off-field trouble and people panic and they think, oh my God, this is going to cost them games. They're going to miss time. They're going to get suspended. And then the next thing you know, nothing like that happens. And I'm not saying that's okay. I'm not condoning any sort of behavior. I'm just saying if you panic sell really, really talented players, it can often end up being a mistake, right? I think about Tyreek Hill, how many times going into the season, it was all the talk of, you know, he's going to miss games. And then the next thing, you know, week one rolls around and he plays the full season. And that's that. That's the way it goes, right? So I would also say Nacua's young, man. Like, he's 24. You know, how many people in terms of athletes and just in terms of regular people as well, how many people are making mistakes at that age? And then they mature and they move on from it and they grow. And I think, you know, that's probably going to happen. I think we're going to look back at, you know, a long, successful career. And this is just going to be like one paragraph on his Wikipedia profile. And it's going to be some mistakes that he made. And he's going to overcome it. And yeah, go on. That's how I would view it. There's some panic because you don't like a series of kind of foolish decisions off the field. At least that's what it seems like. But I think he's probably going to continue to play and continue to be really solid. And if you want to have more of a conversation about the Ty Simpson of it all, that's another story, whether you believe in the quarterback that is going to be the heir apparent to Matthew Stafford. But that might not happen for a couple of years as well. So again, I would be holding on to Puka.
Yeah, I would be too. At the same time, it's for a totally different reason. I would maybe say the same thing that I said about the Travis Hunter stuff, where like both of those situations are not really predicting like, how good is this football player going to be? You know what I'm saying? Like, Travis Hunter, maybe a little, it's definitely more football than Puka Nacua, but it's just like, if you don't want to put up with like worrying about this at all or thinking about this at all, and you want to say like, hey, whoever has Jaxon Smith-Njigba in my league, I'll trade you Puka Nacua and this little forgettable piece if we just swap these two guys, go for it. Like, if you just don't, but that's totally a personal preference. So it's one of those things where, I don't know, do whatever you want. Do whatever makes you feel good. Whatever makes you sleep better at night, you go ahead and do that if you have Puka Nacua on your dynasty roster, because neither Boone nor I is credited enough to say what is going to happen next in that particular situation. Okay, last one we're going to take here before the break. Chris Olave. Slightly concerned with Chris Olave's production moving forward. He lit up the fantasy playoffs, but now has serious competition with Jordan Tyson and Bryce Lance. Looking like the value play in that Saints offense is Tyler Shuck. I mean, listen, Jordan Tyson, definitely competition. Bryce Lance, I like him. Like a day three wide receiver. I don't know about serious competition. I like Bryce Lance though. And I think he's a good pick by them, but still, I mean, come on. Do you have any panic about Chris Olave?
I mean, I don't really have much panic, but again, and I don't want to keep falling back on this. It kind of goes back to the expectations thing, right? If you're expecting him to be a top 10 fantasy receiver, if you're expecting him to, you know, have the fourth most targets in the league on average, you know, I just don't think he's going to necessarily be that same guy that we saw last year where he got that incredible volume. So yes, he's going to take a little bit of a step down, but how far of a step down? In my mind, not that far. I still have him ranked as a high-end wide receiver too for fantasy. I still think he's going to have a great season. This is another offense that we want to invest in. So no, I'm not really that worried about Olave, are you?
No, I have no panic. This is one of those situations, and like a lot of the situations we've talked about, I'm willing to sacrifice some volume for a good offensive environment. And when I see like they add Jordan Tyson, even they add Bryce Lance, you know, they add Travis Etienne in free agency, Tyler Shuck maybe gets better in year two, new guard in free agency. Like, I think this offense is objectively going to be much better than it was last year. And if that also means that Chris Olave is 10th among wide receivers in targets instead of 5th, but he averages more than 7.5 yards per target, averages more than 1.99 yards per route run. Like, I'm totally willing to offset that because the environment's better and he probably is going to score it, more touchdowns. Maybe not more touchdowns. I mean, he scored 9 touchdowns last year. Maybe not. But still, I'm willing to sacrifice some volume for efficiency in this standpoint. That's what I see from the Saints offseason. So yeah, Boone and I are on the same page here. No panic about Chris Olave. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to start those dynasty debates. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back and it's time. Let's get into our dynasty debates. All right, first one up here comes from, am I reading this right? A text from one of Justin Boone's friends. I didn't know that we could text Boone to get our dynasty debates read on the show, but Ryan here, look, a fraudulent email that we've written up here too. This is we've really cooked the books on this one. Text from one of Boone's friends named Ryan. Is Ty Simpson realistically a first round dynasty pick in Superflex related? Are there any other rookie quarterbacks worth taking? I love that. Are there any rookie quarterbacks worth taking? Boone, what did you respond to your friend Ryan, or did you just say, hey, watch the show, pal?
No, well, there was a moment when we first put this out, like you said off the top, where we were debating, like, is there actually going to be enough questions? So I was like, you know what? I have some friends that are big time into fantasy. They often hit me up with stuff. I'm going to let them know that there might be an opportunity. If you got something, send it my way. Maybe we'll get it on the show.
There we go.
Sure enough, I got a couple responses. I also got a couple absolutely insane responses that we will not put on the show. But we got a couple of good ones.
I want to read those. I want those on the show next time. We'll do that for the premium subscribers.
Exactly. And yeah, this one is from Ryan Mitchell, who I play in fantasy leagues against. Good dude, funny guy. And I get it. Like, I kind of said my piece on Ty Simpson when we did the mock draft show with Nate, right, earlier this week, that I don't love the player. I think you do have to take him at some point in the late first round, though, just because that value is going to be sort of insulated for a little while. And you could potentially move him as we get closer to Matthew Stafford moving out of the way and him getting an opportunity. I would be trying to cash that in because the value will go up a little bit at that point. I would try to cash that in before he actually gets on the field. But that's my personal choice because I don't really believe that he is going to be a great long-term starter, a great fantasy asset moving forward. Maybe other people feel more strongly about that. Do you want to comment on that before we get into the rest of the quarterbacks in this class? Because I don't know if it's going to be very positive what I have to say about those guys either.
Oh, man. Yeah. I will just say personally, I was on the clock at the 1.08 pick in a super flex league, non-tight end premium, because nobody really plays tight end premium, just Colin. I have a decent quarterback room, but could use some depth there, and also have kind of a shaky wide receiver room. And I probably thought for about 30 minutes whether I wanted to take Ty Simpson or Omar Cooper Jr. I ultimately went with Omar Cooper Jr. and I just didn't feel great about it. So yeah, I definitely think he's worth a first round pick. Like, I considered him at the 8th pick, and I considered, like, what if Matthew Stafford's back flares up in November and Ty Simpson comes in and he's actually like a pretty good, like he would vault up in like dynasty value and everything like that. So I did consider it, but you know, I ultimately chickened out. So I think he's worth it, but you know, maybe Ryan is more of a man than I am. So you do have to consider that. But what do you think about some of these other rookie quarterbacks in a dynasty draft?
I will say first on Simpson, it could be Tyler Shuck 2.0, where, you know, just with better draft capital, it could definitely be that. And in an offense that we have more faith in that coaching staff, if that coaching staff sticks around when Stafford leaves, which I also don't know if that's a guarantee or not, but regardless, there's a lot of potential variables up in the air there. And I still would play it that way, though, where I would take Simpson. I haven't yet in any of my drafts. I've gone in other directions. But I will say, too, from a dynasty standpoint, even if you're in a super flex league, don't feel compelled to have to go get like a third quarterback to help you out just in case there's injuries. You can play that a variety of ways. You can try to trade for a backup. You can try to go pick up backups, like all that sort of stuff. You could play a different player in that super flex spot while your quarterback's injured for a little bit. You don't necessarily have to waste valuable draft capital getting a quarterback who might just be like a third on your roster. But anyway, that's more like dynasty theory. If we look at the other guys, Mendoza's out of the picture. we've talked about Mendoza. You're going to take him with one of the top five picks in rookie drafts. So I don't even think we need to talk too much about him. If you look deeper than that, though, Carson Beck, I mentioned it earlier. I think he is going to get some starts this year. I would kind of play it the same way the Ty Simpson thing, where you draft him and you could probably get him in the late second or into the third round in Superflex. You hold him on your roster, and as soon as there's talk that he's going to get a chance to start, Jacoby Brissett's going to sit down, I would be trying to trade him before he gets out on the field. But at the same time, they have great skill position talent, which we talked about earlier. So wouldn't be impossible that Beck could have some value there. I would just prefer to get out before any sort of chance of a bottom falling out happens. Drew Aller, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be there, and I don't think he's going to get a chance to start. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is the kind of guy that sits down for a younger quarterback to come in during the season at the end of the year. So I don't know that Drew Aller is going to have much of an opportunity this season. And then you look to the future, I think they'd probably go out and get someone else. I really don't think he's the quarterback of the future for Pittsburgh. So not somebody that I'm targeting there. Talon Green on the Browns, maybe, just because of the uncertainty in that quarterback room, and he's a dual threat guy. He could have some value for fantasy if he does get starts, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see Deshaun Watson and we see Shedeur Sanders and we see Talon Green all get some starts this year for the Browns. I think that's possible. And if you go really, really deep, Jalen Daniels went to the Bucs, signed as a UDFA. Don't have a ton of faith in Jake Browning as the number two quarterback there. So I think it's possible. Another dual threat guy. That offense has some good skill position talent. If Baker Mayfield got hurt and if Daniels won that number two job, he could have some value as well. But that's like end of the roster bench stash. Like, that's not a guy you're even taking in rookie drafts.
I think that's a really good breakdown. I basically echo everything that you said there. One name I just wanted to throw out there that we didn't talk about is Cade Klubnik, the Jets' fourth round pick. They traded up to get him. I know you're look. I'm not saying I'm excited about Cade Klubnik, but he had 463 rushing yards and 7 touchdowns in 2024 for Clemson. Like, he's an RPO kind of quarterback. Frank Reich, this year he's going to run some RPOs. That's what Frank Reich does. It's not like totally out of the question that Geno Smith plays himself out of a job and like Cade Klubnik is getting a couple of dumb starts this year or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we're talking about, whoever this Baker Mayfield backup guy you're tossing out there, like Talon Green obviously has a higher ceiling, but you're kind of betting on the same thing. Like, he gets out there, he's a running quarterback, makes plays this year. I'm just saying, I'm literally on the clock of a fourth round dynasty rookie superflex right now, and I'm looking at Cade Klubnik versus like Kevin Coleman Jr. or some of these, just Skylar Bell, like day three wide receivers. I might just take a shot on Cade Klubnik just to see if like something happens there, like he plays a little bit and has a couple of rushing moments. But ultimately, I saw your eye roll, so I feel like I know how you feel about this.
If you do it, just trade him before he starts. Like I said about the other guys, as soon as the rumors come out that he's going to start, trade him for what you can get. Cause I saw a career backup. I did not see a guy who's going to be an NFL starter.
Yeah. I feel the same way. Okay. That is going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. So we're going into our last break of the show here. However, we are going to come back. We're going to continue our dynasty debates on the other side of this. So if you're watching us on YouTube, we've got a ton more dynasty content coming up after we take this very mandatory final break. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. And it looks like we've got another text to get into here, Boone. Is this another text to you from another friend named Ryan? Are all of your friends named Matt Harmon and Ryan? I mean, what's the deal here?
That was one of the funniest realizations that came out of this, that yes, the two texts that I got that we're going to use are both from Ryan, one Ryan Mitchell, one Ryan Parco. And Harmon, I realized the best man at my wedding is Ryan Whittem. So apparently the vast majority of my friends are named Ryan. I don't know what that's all about. Never thought about it before today, but that's where things stand. But I did think this was a pretty good question that hit on a lot of players and also kind of hit on some dynasty roster building strategy that I think we can get into.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to let you cook on this one. Dynasty roster of valuable wide receivers: Jamar Chase, Drake London, Tetero McMillan. Maybe it's Jalen McMillan. I don't know. But I'm assuming Tetero McMillan. Rashee Rice,
where he
Ricky
is in
Pearsall,
the order,
Travis Hunter.
It's got to be Tetero McMillan, yeah.
Listen, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Ryan is a big Jalen McMillan guy. What can I say? Travis Hunter, Luther Burden, Jalen Coker, Adonai Mitchell. This is a pretty cool little room here. And two first rounders next year, 5 second rounders. I'm lean at running back and at tight end. I've got Isaiah Likely, Mason Taylor, and Pat Freiermuth. Is it worth the capital to trade up for a high-end tight end slash running back, or ride it out for next year's draft and hope rookies like Oscar Delp or Eli Raridan turn into something? Boone, what do you think on this?
So I don't know, and he has asked me about this team before, and he probably has told me the starting lineups for it, and I don't remember, but if it's one of those leagues where you're starting five receivers, that might change the situation. I'm in some leagues like that. I don't think that's the case in this league. So he has this incredible receiver room. He's clearly been listening to us, because I always talk about in Dynasty, I want to build up my quarterbacks, I want to build up my receivers, and then I want to try to find value at tight end along the way. And running back is normally like the last piece of the puzzle for me. I'm willing to go spend for a running back. And sometimes you can do it cheap. If the rest of your roster is really strong, you could try to go get a cheaper guy. And there's a bunch out there right now, guys that would be discounted veterans, like CMC would be like that now. Derrick Henry, David Montgomery, I think is somebody that people probably don't realize how valuable he could be in that Texans offense. Even like Chuba Hubbard, I think a lot of people are down on Chuba Hubbard, and yet he's going to have a shot to have a big role in that Panthers backfield with Rico Dowdle gone. So I think you could go out and not have to spend the first round picks for 2027, which I think are incredibly valuable. You want to hold on to those. Maybe package some guys here that you don't necessarily need, like a Ricky Pearsall, something like that. Package one of those guys with a second rounder next year and try to get yourself some help at running back or tight end. Or even if you're not sure that Isaiah Likely is going to be the guy, I think there's a chance Likely could be a fine starting tight end. But if you're not sure about that, package Likely with a pick and move up to get a better tight end, try to get one of the top guys that's actually a difference maker. So I think he's doing everything right here, and he listened. He tried to get a bunch of those 2027 rookie picks. He's loaded with those. Yeah. I think I might even referenced his team on the show the other day where I was talking about how I have a friend that listened and went and got all these picks. This was the guy. But yeah, his team looks really good, and his team is in contention with that receiver room, and with assuming the quarterbacks are good, and it sounds like they probably are. So I would go out, I would spend, I would try to make some big moves to, you know, get things set at tight end and running back. You don't necessarily have to do that right now. You could wait until closer to the season so that if there's any preseason injuries, you're not shooting yourself in the foot before you get to week one. There's no reason why your team has to be awesome on April 30th. Your team just needs to be ready to go week one, and throughout the season you can kind of build. But yeah, I think he's doing things right here, and I think I would go out and try to spend to, you know, shore up those other two spots to make sure that you can be really competitive and really dangerous and potentially bring home the title.
Good breakdown by you. I think I agree with most of that. I would probably lean on just riding it out at tight end. And yeah, take like an Eli Raridan, who we're pretty high on at this podcast, and like see what happens. Oh God, he got taken one pick ahead of me in a rookie draft in the third round, and I'm still pissed about it. But yeah, like let's see what happens there in terms of tight ends. I would probably ride that out. At running back though, like, again, yes, Boone's right. If you start like five receivers or something, maybe I would think differently, but even still, like, this is such a good room. I have faith in guys like Pearsall and Burden and even Coker. Like, especially, yeah, like Burden, I have a lot of faith in breaking out, even though we talked about that a little bit earlier. Like, I'm not totally convinced he's going to be, you know, clearly better than Adunze. I still have a lot of faith in him breaking out. Like, I think you've got you got a ton of guys in my top 20 of my dynasty rankings. I would consider looking at like a McMillan or a Rice, guys that I think might be a touch overvalued in dynasty, and like trading them straight up for a good running back, you know? You would have to pry Jamar Chase out of my cold, dead hands. Like, I would just never, ever trade Jamar Chase if I had him. I do have him in Dynasty League. I'm, like, never going to trade him. He'll either I'll die or he'll retire on my roster. That's how it's going to go. Drake London, I would not trade either. But, like, again, McMillan, I think, could maybe be I've seen some place where he's, like, wide receiver 9 in Dynasty. I think maybe that's a little much. Obviously, Rice is a volatile player off the field as well. I think, you know, set up well this year, but volatile off the field, you never know. I would Boone think about taking one of those two guys, and like if a team in your league needs a receiver and they've got a good running back room, you'd probably want, unless it's one of the best running backs in the league, like a running back plus something else to trade those guys. But I would at least think about one of those offers.
And those are the best trades. I think too often people will go look at, let's say, like my trade value charts, and they'll be like, okay, I want to trade this player. They'll go look for equal value, and then they'll try to make that deal without actually looking at other managers' rosters and being like, do they need this player? Do they need a guy at this position?
Yes.
Because that's how you're going to extract the most value, right? So the smartest move here, if you are going to do what you're talking about, look around the league, see who's weak at receiver, and then put that carrot out there for them, because that's how you're going to get a ton in return. And if they're not the team that has the running back you want, get something of value back. If you can win that trade, then you can turn around. I've done that before, Harmon, and it's funny, but I've made trades with people where I know 100% I'm about to turn around in the next 24 hours. The thing that I just acquired from them, I'm putting in another deal to someone else. And people kind of throw their hands up and they're like, what was that all about? But that's how I was thinking. I knew that the team I wanted to trade with didn't want what I had. So I need to go exchange that for a piece that this other team really wanted. You have to look at it that way. That's what Dynasty is all about. That's why people spend all offseason thinking about these trades. And I just did update a Dynasty trade value charts this week. So if anyone does want to go look at those to use as a guide to try to build those trade offers, not a direct one-for-one kind of thing, they're out there and they're refreshed and ready to go.
Love that. Speaking of refreshed, I just did not me, Zach Miller, who works at Reception Perception, put in a ton of work to completely refresh my Dynasty rankings on my site into a new tool. I think you guys are really going to like it if you want to check it out. By the way, speaking of Ryan's team, 5 receivers in my top 3 tiers, 4 players in my top 20 in terms of Dynasty wide receiver rankings. So doing really well there. Plus, I'm higher than consensus on the guys like Coker, Mitchell, even Ricky Pearsall. So you're in good shape, Ryan. You could part with one of those wide receivers, but try to make it an even trade, as Boone was saying. That's the ethical thing to do here. Okay, let's get into some emails. We'll get out of Justin Boone's text messages and we'll get into the emails here. Dominic, I gotta see, this is what I'm saying. Dominic, I know Dominic sends in a lot of emails and he tweets at us big time. Appreciate you, Dominic. You're the man. I appreciate you engaging with the content. I really don't want to read this question because I gotta start it off with, what's up, goats?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I feel weird.
Awkward,
weird addressing
right.
ourselves. Appreciate you though, Dominic. It's going to get weirder in a different port, but I'm just going to read it as is. What's up, goats? If Keon likely won't survive outside anymore, if Shakir only plays in the slot, if Skylar Bell profiles as a slot, and Kincaid continues to be, quote, the biggest, slowest slot, to quote the great, the great Matt Harmon. I'm going to puke saying that about myself. Then how the hell does this Bills wide receiver core shake out outside of DJ Moore, who I assume plays the X? Are they going to have to pull a Josh Grizzard and blur the lines between each type of receiver? What am I missing? Number one, again, outside of saying the great Matt Harmon and goats, this was an awesome question, and you can clearly tell that he listens to the content because this is like a right up my alley type of question. Boone, you're wearing the Bills hat. What do you think about this Bills wide receiver room? Like, how does this shake out? Because there is still some, like, kind of a lot of slot-ish receivers, but I don't totally disagree with Skylar Bell just being a slot.
Yeah, we're going from, like, texts from my friends. Now we're talking about my favorite team. This is like a Boone-themed section. I love this. I'm sure he wants to hear your take because he's quoting things that you've said in the past. But from my perspective, Moore's going to be the top dog this year. Shakir, that, like, reliable slot guy, sure. I think Bell, I don't think he necessarily is just a slot. I think he could be inside or outside. Josh Palmer maybe mixes in a little bit. I don't think Keon Coleman is really a factor. We saw this go down last year. I think Keon Coleman is an afterthought now. And yes, this is a lot different than what I was saying last offseason when we were hearing a ton of exciting things about him, even from teammates. I think it's a different scenario now where we saw them basically move on from him last year. So anything that he gives them, it's just a bonus. I don't think he's a starter on this team. I think they are going to try to work Bell in there, but the Bills are going to continue to spread the ball around. That is their thing, right? Yeah. So I think DJ Moore is interesting for fantasy. I think he does still have something left in the tank. we talked about Shakir before. Shakir, even when they had all these struggles at receiver in recent years and didn't really have a ton of competition, he just doesn't put up like huge stats. He has the odd big game, but really not much, right? He played 16 games last year. He had 719 yards and 4 touchdowns. That is not a needle mover for fantasy. Now you have DJ Moore there. Maybe Skylar Bell gets involved. Like, I just don't think Shakir needs to be in the equation for fantasy. So you hope that Skylar Bell could come on and be something in this offense. But really, if I'm investing in receivers in this room, it's DJ Moore, and you're not going to get that veteran discount because he just got traded to the Bills and that was making a lot of headlines and all that sort of stuff. But I'm interested in DJ Moore this year in this offense. I'm not that excited.
Where do you have him ranked?
The other receivers, unless you're getting Skylar Bell, much deeper. He's more of like a third round pick in rookie drafts. And even then, and we've talked about this the way it is this year, Skylar Bell, just like a long shot of all these guys that are going like the third round or so. These are long shots in your rookie draft in what's a bad class. DJ Moore, are we talking about his ranking for Dynasty or his ranking for redraft? Just Dynasty?
Both.
Directly
give me both.
In front of me. I have him in the high 20s. So he's inside of the top 30 in my redraft.
Yeah.
And in Dynasty, I did not have this ready to go. In Dynasty, wide receiver 36.
Okay. I have him wide receiver 29 in redraft. In Dynasty, I have him at wide receiver 44, which might be a little too low there. It might be a little too low. I'll take a look at that. But
I've also sort of changed my approach Dynasty-wise in more recent years, where I'm focusing a lot more on the next couple of seasons. I think some people look at, when they're talking about Dynasty rankings, they look a lot further out. I've kind of shifted that in recent years to try to make teams more competitive in the next couple of seasons, in part, and you can hear it from what we've talked about today, how quick scenarios change. And you think you know what's going to happen 3-4 years down the road, and it's just not the same situation at all. So that's why I've tried to do that. And also because, and I think I brought this up on the show one time before, I think when you are rebuilding, unless your team is just absolutely atrocious, you can rebuild in a way where you can get competitive pretty quickly again within a year or so. It doesn't take, you don't have to trust the process and do a 3-4 year rebuild. You can really, in a year or two, turn things around and become a playoff team, get that chip in a chair, and try to get yourself back into the fantasy championship with the right moves.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You don't want to look too far out. And I do think Moore is set up to have a couple of nice years or so in Buffalo. I think he'll probably be around the next 2 years at least. I'm looking at, again, in my new tool, not to keep pumping this out here, but I'm 11 and a half spots lower than where he's going in, like in the market and everything. And yes, Boone, I'm a sellout now. I railed on the idea of the market, and now we're incorporating that into this new tool. So I am a sellout here because I do what the people want. All right. What is what the people want? That's what we're doing. Real quick, just for me, on the breakdown of these Bills wide receivers, here's how I think. There's a couple scenarios that this can go down. One, there is the mythical scenario where, they move Keon Coleman to, off ball. He plays it more as, a big power Z receiver, power slot receiver. That's possible. I think it's very unlikely. So I'm just going to kind of put that to the side, although I do want to acknowledge it. There's a chance that happens. The most likely scenario to me, Boone, is that DJ Moore is the X. Josh Palmer is the Z receiver. And then we didn't even mention Josh Palmer, but, he's on a 3-year deal and probably is going to be on this roster. And then Khalil Shakir is the slot. I do think the other scenario is that Skylar Bell, who I don't view as a slot receiver, I view him as more of a speed Z receiver. He eventually pushes Josh Palmer at that spot, and he kind of can take the Z receiver job in time. The other scenario is Keon Coleman does have a rebirth, like Joe Brady keeps talking about, and he is the X receiver, and then DJ Moore's the Z, and then Skylar Bell and Khalil Shakir kind of rotate at the slot. But I think this all profiles is DJ Moore's here and everybody else kind of rotates in his orbit, essentially, is where this goes. I think long and short, if you want to get into the dorky positional designations of all of it, those are kind of my thoughts on my breakdown. But from a fantasy standpoint, it is DJ Moore, and then everybody else is kind of, I think, an afterthought. Although Khalil Shakir will be relatively productive. Okay, last email that we have here from Rich S. on the Miami wide receiver core. How do you guys see the three wide receivers that the Miami Dolphins drafted shaking out in real life? And how would you rank them for fantasy and dynasty? As a Packers fan, I'm not at all surprised they took a shotgun approach to the position, but haven't heard much about Douglas. From a fantasy perspective, I usually lean towards taking whoever's cheapest to acquire, but I do like the landing spot for Chris Bell long term. Thanks. I agree with you, Rich. This was what I expect them to do, take the shotgun approach and just draft a bunch of day two, day three type wide receivers. So, Boone, the Dolphins drafted in this order, Caleb Douglas, Chris Bell, and Kevin Coleman Jr. to compete in a room of Jalen Tolbert, Malik Washington, Tutu Atwell, and some other guys. How do you view those three wide receivers they drafted? How do you think this shakes out?
Chris Bell is the only one that I'm interested in taking, and he has been one of my favorite second round picks in the drafts that I've done so far. I really like the potential there. I talked about him during the mock draft episode this week where I think they got an injury discount on him. I think fantasy managers are getting an injury discount on him with him going to the second round. I think if he was healthy, we'd be having a lot more conversations about him maybe being up in that late first round mix in dynasty rookie drafts. So I'm excited to see what he can do, but he had surgery on his ACL in December, and I think they're going to be patient with him. So I don't really know when we're going to see him out there. And that could lead to his value dropping a little bit. If we get a bunch of headlines, how he's not ready for week one, that just inevitably lowers guys' dynasty values. So be ready for that. If you're drafting him, you're going to have to be patient and wait for him to get his opportunity in what is just a absolute wide open receiving core. Like, this is probably the worst one in the league, right? Like, I think they've taken it away from the Raiders, and the Raiders didn't make many moves this offseason, and yet this Dolphins group is just awful. I'm not that excited about Caleb Douglas, about Kevin Coleman Jr. I think Coleman might be a little more pro ready, so maybe he ends up kind of having more value this year. But I'm just not that enticed by either of these guys. I think they're going to get inflated because of the opportunity and the potential that they could carve out a role, when in reality, I'm not convinced that they're going to even have roles in this receiver core this season. And we might just see more of the Malik Washington, Jalen Tolbert types. And if you're going after this, like, this is like thrift store shopping for Dynasty, right? Like, you're trying to find potential value in a guy that you could throw in your lineup, but what are you even getting? Like, maybe you're getting like a bye week replacement guy. Maybe you're getting, if you're in one of those leagues where you're starting like five receivers, maybe you could play one of these guys as your fifth receiver, but you're not going to be that excited to have any of these guys, I don't think, in your lineup if you're a serious contender. Do you feel differently about Douglas or Coleman? No. And am I wrong about these guys, Harmon? You think there's more value there?
No, and I know it's like really usually silly to go against draft capital so much with like how much Caleb Douglas was taken in the third round. He was taken ahead of Chris Bell. And I don't think he's a worthless player whatsoever. I actually think he's a solid developmental X receiver who reminds me a lot of Quentin Johnston. Like, eerily reminds me. Like, they run the exact same way. I think it's kind of, I'm surprised nobody else has noted this. If someone has and I haven't seen it, that's fine. But yeah, like, I kind of like him, but I liked him more as a, you know, fourth, fifth round NFL draft pick, not a third round draft pick. So I still think like Chris Bell's the guy to target here, but I do like your point about like how his value might fall in the first like couple months of the season. Cause not only is he not going to participate, I think he's probably not going to, I mean, I don't know that he'll play all that well cause he didn't have an off season here. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but like, I'm excited about Chris Bell in this landing spot. I think he fits this offense really well. Meanwhile, Kevin Coleman, again, also a player I kind of liked as a day three draft pick. I think he'll compete with Malik Washington to be the slot receiver. And I'd give Malik Washington the edge just because he's an NFL veteran. So I think those guys are fine late round dart throws in dynasty rookie drafts. But yeah, Chris Bell's the only guy that I'd feel, you know, excited to take. But we're going to talk about actually Chris Bell here in our first Twitter tweet section here. So let's keep the Chris Bell conversation going. But we're going to rapid fire, and I mean it, Boone. Both of, let's hold each other accountable.
All right,
here.
I will do my best.
We're gonna actually try to. The two biggest loudmouths in the fantasy football industry are gonna try to rapid fire these last four questions so we can get rolling here. First one comes in from Joe again on the topic of Chris Bell. Who do you like better in the top half of round two in rookie dynasty drafts, Chris Bell or Dejon Stribling? Bell seems to have a higher ceiling and an easier path to wide receiver one status, but Miami is a mess. Stribling is older and has Mike Evans ahead of him, plus a lot of target competition. I'm going to throw this to you first, Boone, although I will say, like, Joe, it kind of sounds like you're talking yourself into Chris Bell, so maybe if you want to take Chris Bell, go for it. But what do you think, Boone, between Stribling versus Bell in round two of rookie drafts?
I have them back to back. I have Bell one spot higher. They're sort of in that early second to mid second round value for me. I kind of like both of them. And we've talked about this, Harmon. I will go quick. Don't worry. Bell, it's going to take a little while. Stripling might also take a little while, right? There's a lot of competition with the 49ers, but there's a lot of guys that have injury histories that are older. So there could be opportunity for him right away. It just might require someone else to get hurt or a couple guys to get hurt this season. I like taking both of them. I'm targeting both these guys. I did a mock draft, a rookie mock that went up on the site yesterday. I took Stribling as my second pick. I picked at the 205. I took him there. I'm happy to take him there. I want pieces of the 49ers offense. I think he's a good pick there. I know some people can't get over the fact that they had him very low in their rankings and he went where he did in the real life draft, but that's what the draft's all about. You have to adapt. You have to take in the draft capital, the landing spots. And to me, that bumps him up into the mid second round.
Totally agree with you on that last point there that, yeah, I think you do have to take account. And yeah, this was some dumb team that took him. And I know the Niners have had a mixed draft history, to be kind. That would be a different part of it. But still, like I thought Stribling was a viable day two pick. They just took him way aggressively on day two, obviously. But it wasn't this like he was a sixth rounder. Everybody was talking about him going on day two as we got closer to the NFL draft. You listened to our Mock Draft Monday episode with DJ right before the draft. I believe we talked about Stribling. I might have been off air, but hopefully it was on air. I don't know. Either way, he is a guy that was rising towards that day two ranking. So I also, funnily enough, have them back to back in my Dynasty rookie rankings that I just updated this morning. I have them same tier. So if you want to talk yourself into Chris Bell, go for it. I just have Stribling a little bit ahead at this point because I feel better about the landing spot. And he's got a big path to immediate playing time as well. Like Mike Evans gets hurt and like Stribling could be like cooking in the back half of this season. He is definitely one of those candidates there. Okay, next question. Jeremiah Love versus Jadarian Price. At the end of the season, looking at fantasy points per game, how close do you think Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price will finish this season, with Love likely not being projected the touchdowns and Price likely seeing more pay dirt? Should they be drafted in a similar tier for redraft? I do not know this, how to read this person's Twitter name. So you see it on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. So shout out to you for the question. Good question. I think it's a fun question. Boone, how close do you think the gap will be?
I don't think it's going to be close. Is that like a weird take? I don't even get the thing about Love not projected for the touchdowns. He's definitely going to score touchdowns. Like I get the Tyler Allgeier there. So I'm assuming that's what they're referencing.
That's what I think it is.
Tyler Allgeier is going to be the goal line back. But like, think back to, and again, we saw this kind of scenario happen when Bijan Robinson went to the Falcons. Tyler Allgeier was there. They both split work in that first year. John Robinson had 8 touchdowns that season. So yeah, it wasn't a 15 touchdown season, but he scored touchdowns. Love is a really good prospect. Love was taken at the top of round one, Price at the late round one. We've talked already about how running backs that go in the late first round, not the best history. That doesn't mean that they can't hit, but not as many of them have hit, and a ton of them have ended up being busts. Meanwhile, you look in the last like 12 or 13 years here, I wrote about this recently, I'll pull it up. Running backs who were taken in the top 12, okay, over the last 13 years, all finished as the RB14 or better during their rookie seasons. You have Ashton Jeanty, RB14, Bijan Robinson, RB12, Jahmyr Gibbs, RB9, Saquon Barkley, RB3, Leonard Fournette, RB8, Christian McCaffrey, RB11. I know this is supposed to be rapid fire. Ezekiel Elliott, RB2, Todd Gurley, RB6, even Trent Richardson, and we could add him in. Even Trent Richardson did it during his rookie season. So there is just a great history of running backs going in that range of the draft, being not just good dynasty values, but being really good redraft values as rookies. So I'm excited to take him. I think it's a big gap. I have him in the low RB1 range, low end RB1. And to me, I'm looking at Price. I'll be happy if he can get into the low end RB2 range. But right now, I think he's on that borderline, high end RB3, low end RB2.
Yeah, I think I'm probably closer to, I can very much see the path for high end running back two for Jadarian Price. Good situation, good rushing ecosystem. But obviously, we just got to see how the summer goes for him. Whereas Jeremiah Love, like, I do think there are at least some concerns with the outlook. Just like Cardinals offense, how many touchdowns are they going to score if Allgeier is vulturing some touchdowns? I don't think it's an out of totally out of bounds question. I still think Love, like, I don't think they should be ranked or drafted in a similar tier in redraft. Like, I just think the odds that Love is incredible are much higher than the odds that Jadarian Price is incredible, if that makes sense.
I'm not going to suggest that I would eat a pen or anything like that, but we're like almost eat a pen level on my views on this. Like, Love is so far away, but I would never, ever suggest that I would eat a pen for a bet.
Well, let's put a pin in that. We'll come back to that at some other point. When Boone's a little bit, we're close to our fantasy season. Boone's a little more fired up. I like that. I'm going to put a pin in the pen talk for you, and maybe we'll have you eat something else, not a pen. I don't want you to die, pal. I want you to be on this podcast with me for the rest of time. All right. Next one here. This year's Torrey Horton. Do you have a Torrey Horton-like sleeper that could come out and be a wide receiver 1 to 3 on their team? By the way, hell of a range here from Tucker Italiano. I see. I can read that name. That's good. Wide receiver 1 to 3. Like, yeah, I got a lot of guys that can be 3, but we'll stick on the idea of the question here. Was able to snag Torrey Horton in my 10-man dynasty league on waivers after our 3-round draft. Still really like Torrey Horton. Rashid Shaheed kind of come back there. Dampers maybe the full breakout enthusiasm a little bit, but nevertheless, Boone. Day 3 sleepers. I want to hear who you have, but because I know if I ask you day 3 sleepers, you might list off 25. I'll just give you a couple here that I think fit the bill for this. And again, I'm only going day 3 guys here because I do think, you know, players like Malachi Fields, I think people are sleeping on. I do think he could come out and be like the 2 for this team, but he was drafted in the 3rd round, whatever. So Elijah Surratt, I've talked about this a lot. I definitely think he could come out and be a day 3 steal. I love that Eric DaCosta, the general manager, said we really, really like him inside. He's been the guy that I've wanted to kick from the outside to the slot as a collegiate player. Love that for him. He is definitely somebody that I've taken in the 3rd round of rookie drafts and been very excited to do it. The other guy is Cyrus Allen, the Chiefs wide receiver. Boone, in my dynasty write-up for him, I said, you get 2 beers in me, and I would easily tell you this guy's the best separator on the Chiefs roster. which, you know, is something that I say, you know, a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Again, get 2 beers in me, and I would say it. But, yeah, Cyrus Allen, like I mentioned on our dynasty rookie draft, yeah, I really like the player. Good landing spot. So he would be probably the best candidate for this. Do you like those? Do you have any others?
No, I like those. And no, this isn't the kind of year where we're rattling off 25 players at any position for the rookies. It's just not like that. I put 3 names down for this one. Allen was one of them, and I assume that you were going to talk about him. Skylar Bell on the Bills is another. Yeah. We've already talked about him and the opportunity that could be there. And then one that I was not interested in, but I'm a little more interested in now, is Brendan Thompson going to the Chargers. And part of that is just Mike McDaniel being like so fired up, right? The history of, what is he, 5'9", like 164 pounds. The history of guys like that coming into the league and actually doing something for fantasy, it's not very extensive. But seeing how much his OC is excited to get him and literally pounding the table to get them to draft him, it at least tells you that he envisions something for him. So if he can hold up to the pro game, if he can avoid injury, all that sort of stuff, maybe he could carve out a role in that Chiefs and that Chargers offense. But yeah, again, all these guys are pretty big long shots. And I don't feel about any of them the way that I felt about Torrey Horton last year. I also thought Torrey Horton was going to be potentially a breakout player. And we saw a little bit of that before he got hurt. Now, I'm not sure where he even stands in terms of the injury and getting over that and where he'll be coming into this season. But yeah, I don't feel that level about anybody. And to be honest, I've really gone more towards tight ends and running backs. And there's not even that many running backs in the, you know, 4th round or so of these dynasty rookie drafts. But I've leaned more that way than I have grabbing receivers.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And yeah, I agree with you about the Brendan Thompson shout. That's another really good one. I don't know that he would be able to handle the volume to be like this type that I would imagine Torrey Horton could be, but I do really like that. And Skylar Bell's a good shout too. I'm a little lower than consensus on Skylar Bell, but there are some evaluators I really, really respect that love Skylar Bell. So definitely a good hedge there. And again, he fits into that speed Z role. I just hope he doesn't get pigeonholed as a slot. Okay, last question, and this is the most important question of them all, Boone. What is the tangible difference, if any, between Zachariah Branch and Kendrick Law. This question comes in from Aaron Martin, who says, trying to get a grasp on the latter as a Lions fan, and they seem similar. Both are hyper-explosive athletes with limited downfield usage. Was he, Kendrick Law, nerfed by Kentucky's quarterback play? Okay, one, I wanted this. Actually, two reasons I wanted this question in here. One, I think I'm getting pigeonholed as your burner Zachariah account. Branch
This is
hate.
Definitely a Harmon question.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I feel like I'm getting pigeonholed a little bit here as a Zachariah Branch hater. I'm not. I want to get that on the record.
I was going more for the Kendrick Law love. I've heard you talk about this guy. You've been trying to convince me to move him up higher in my rankings.
And that was why the only reason I was like, we've got to include this question here, because Boone, I saw, put out his top 90 dynasty rankings. And just as a joke, I sent him the link and, you know, said, too low on Kendrick Law, bro. Like, we like just picked the most random name of a guy I do kind of sort of liked at the very end of the list. And I think Boone thought I was serious, and maybe I was like 15% serious that I would have him over some of those other guys. But again, it was just funny that we were just texting about the Kendrick Law thing, and then Aaron hops in with a question here. And Aaron doesn't even follow me on Twitter. Okay, so this isn't about me. All right, this is a legit question. So other than the 26-pound difference between the two players, what is the difference between these two guys?
I mean, the biggest difference in terms of their fantasy value is the opportunity they're going to get. And that's why I did think you were serious about Kendrick Law and all the talk about him. But I just don't see a path for him in that Lions offense. And I'm sure you're going to break down the types of receivers they are, so I'll leave that for you. But just looking at their fantasy value, he's joining a receiving core where they have Amon-Ra St. Brown and they have Jameson Williams and Isaac Tesla, who fared pretty well last year. I don't see a path to him getting targets, where regardless of what you think about Zachariah Branch, there is so much opportunity in that Falcons receiving core. He might end up being the number two receiver there just by default. So I don't think it's even close in my mind. But in terms of the type of player, Harmon, I'll let you finally talk about your love of Kendrick Law here. Go for it.
Okay, number one, Jahan Dotson erasure by you. So I'm going to take that personally.
Hey, I have him on tons of dynasty teams. You know that. You know that's true.
I know. No, again, this is not a negative about Zachariah Branch, but I did mention, like, Kendrick Law is 26 pounds heavier, 5'11", much bigger guy. Like, he's a big, sturdy player who they did give a lot of design touches to at Kentucky, but charting him, I thought like he did bring some realness to him as a receiver. You know, I think a better comparison for him in terms of he's of this archetype, but a better, way better version of it is like Malachi Corley. Remember when he was coming to the NFL a couple of years ago? He's already been cut by the team that drafted him, by the way. Remember? Oh my God. Look, we've all got bad misses, but Joe Douglas being like so gassed up about, I can't believe all these dumb teams letting Malachi Corley fall to us. Malachi Corley, no matter what. And then the Jets cut him. Anyways, he's on the Browns right now. But like that type of guy who's a big yards after catch, design touches player, he's kind of like that. But I just thought Kendrick Law could run some real deal routes. So again, is there any opportunity available in Detroit? No, I'm not even sure Isaac Tesla is going to get a lot of targets this year as the third receiver, and he's somebody I'm intrigued by. But you know, someone to just keep on like the keep in the back of your mind, and for Lions fans, you know, could he be like a backup to Amon-Ra St. Brown as kind of a sturdier, bigger slot based player? I certainly think that is the case, and it's nice to just kind of have that archetype in the room. So I would say, yeah, Lions fans, I liked him as a day three receiver. Fantasy fans, I mean, keep him like in the back of your mind. But yeah, I mean, I have him ranked extremely low in my dynasty rankings. I think he is, he's down there. All right, let's just say he's ranked pretty low.
This Kendrick Law clip is going to be coming to Harmon's social media feeds in the next day or two here. So be ready. If people didn't hear it on the show, I'm sure they're going to see it when you put it out at some point here. To put a bow on this, though, dynasty-wise, Harmon, I will say we talked about how like late first round all the way into like the third round, drafts are going to differ wildly, right? I've seen it already in some of my drafts where guys who I value as like mid to late second round picks are falling into the third round. So my advice to people, even if you don't have a pick in a certain range, make sure, I do a lot of slow drafts. I hope people are doing those out there right now, because there's no reason why you need to sit down for an hour or two and do a draft. Slow drafts are fun. Nope. They allow for a lot more trading. If you're doing that, make sure you continue to pay attention to who's still on the board, who's being taken, because I had one third round pick in one of my drafts. I'd already traded my first and second away. It's six rounds. I'd already traded my first, second, my fourth, fifth, and sixth picks were all gone. I only had a third. And yet I saw Zachariah Branch fall to the mid third round. And I went, okay, I'm going to use my third on him. And then I saw DeMont Claiborne continue to fall to like 307. And I traded back in to get him. And I didn't think I would do that with any player this year. And yet I see some value there. I see an opportunity, and I think it's worth trading a deep bench guy to get that third round pick. It was not me giving up very much, but I think that's important for people. You'll see some guys fall. Drafts are going to differ wildly. Make sure you're paying attention and maybe even move them back in to get some of the value that falls when it's guys that we're looking at as second round values who are falling to the third or maybe even later.
No question. And I think people will be pretty willing to part with those third round picks this year. I don't think there's a lot of flag planting going on in this year's draft. Boone, hell of a show. I mean, my God, this was a long one. It was a beefy one, but I was skeptical about some of the panic stuff, but I had a lot of fun. This was a good one. I appreciate you doing it, buddy.
These are supposed to be like our off-season episodes. We always go in thinking they're going to be shorter, and now every time we're going over an hour and a half, and that's just the love. That's just a passion. That's just me and you could probably talk about anything this long, but it's always fun doing this, man. It's fun breaking out the panic meter, and it's fun talking Dynasty, too, because that's what it's all about this time of year.
No question. And by the way, I looked at this outline today. I thought there was no way this was going to be a short show. This was a packed show. These Dynasty ones especially can get long winded. And yeah, I mean, we're just kicking back. We're just talking ball. Some people say it's a hell of a day to talk ball here at the end of April. So I appreciate all of you guys for listening, watching. If you have made it this far in the show, we would love it if you would subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to podcasts, or you would subscribe to the YouTube channel. I mean, the YouTube channel is a great place to be. Guys are mixing it up in the comments. Give us all your Kendrick Law thoughts. You got Kendrick Law takes? Drop them in the comments after you subscribe to the channel. We would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Shout out to everyone who sent in questions for the Dynasty debates and the panic meter. We have the best listeners and subscribers in the entire world. We could not get to sit here in April and talk for an hour and freaking 40 minutes about football if it wasn't for you guys. Meanwhile, while I'm telling you guys to do stuff, check out Yahoo Sports coverage of the Miami Grand Prix. Starting this weekend, you can watch F1 practice and qualifying coverage for free on yahoosports.com and the Yahoo Sports app. Free practice one begins at noon Eastern on Friday, May 1st, while qualifying takes place on 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, May 2nd. The Miami Grand Prix will stream on Apple TV at 4 p.m. Sunday, May 3rd. So check it all out at yahoosports.com/racing. We will be back on Tuesday as Justin Boone returns and we dissect our first staff redraft mock of the season. We hinted a little bit at it today. It's going to be some Colson Loveland talk, that is for sure. That's going to be live at 2 p.m. Eastern next Tuesday on this here YouTube channel, which you subscribe to because I just asked you very nicely to subscribe to the channel. In the meantime, until then, we are out.